welcome to the May 2025 edition of The Seagull, the place to stay up to date on everything you need to know about the 102nd Intelligence Wing at Otis Air National Guard Base, right here from beautiful Cape Cod, Massachusetts. I'm Tim Sandlin from Public Affairs. Let me get you up to speed on what's going on here at the Wing. Spring has sprung and the nice weather is finally back. It's May, the month when the wild blue yonder starts to feel a whole lot friendlier. The sun is shining, the waves are crashing, and the lobster rolls are calling. This month on The Seagull, we're diving deep into all things Otis. As we dive into this week's episode, we'll take a quick look at a few of the notable stories that hit the Wing's social media over the past month. We welcome back our five questions segment with a quick interview with the Inspector General's office. We hear from Colonel Stephen Dillon, 253rd Group Commander, as he presents this month's command message.
To the members of the 102nd Intelligence Wing, I'm Colonel Stephen Dillon, commander of the 253rd Cyberspace Engineering and Installation Group. This month's command message commemorates the 80th anniversary of Victory in Europe Day, or VE Day. On May 8, 1945, the skies over Europe fell silent. The roar of engines, the thunder of bombs, the staccato of machine guns all gave way to victory. VE Day wasn't just an end to the fighting. It was the moment when warriors prove that freedom, when defended with unbending resolve, cannot be conquered. The men who flew through hell in the United States Army Air Force didn't merely participate in victory, they delivered it. Through flak so thick you could walk on it, through winter skies that killed as surely as enemy fighters, through odds that would make the devil himself hesitate, they pressed forward. The strategic bombing campaign didn't just damage Nazi industry, it shattered the enemy's will. Our airmen didn't just fly missions, they hammered tyranny into submission with American steel and American grit. These weren't just pilots and bombardiers, they were warriors who understood that in the crucible of combat, hesitation means death. And weakness invites aggression. They embraced a warrior ethos that demanded everything, and they gave it willingly. Today, as we stand on the shoulders of giants, we face a horizon darkened by new threats. China's military buildup isn't a theoretical concern. It's a gauntlet thrown down before us. Their hypersonic weapons, their expanding nuclear arsenal, their aggressive posture in the Pacific, these aren't diplomatic inconveniences. They are challenges that demand warriors ready to stand their ground. Our Air Force remains the deadliest fighting force ever assembled. But hardware alone doesn't win wars. Victory comes from the unyielding spirit of airmen who understand that peace is protected by those prepared for war. The same warrior ethos that guided Doolittle's raiders over Tokyo and the bomber crews through the skies of Fortress Europe must burn in our hearts today. We don't train to compete. We train to dominate. We don't prepare for minor contingencies. We forge ourselves for the harshest tests of combat. The lessons of VE Day isn't just about celebrating peace. It's about honoring the hard truth that peace comes through superior firepower and the unshakable will to use it when necessary. As tensions rise and the challenges mount, remember this, our predecessors didn't defeat fascism by hoping for its collapse. They crushed it with American air power, with American courage, and American determination. That is our heritage. That is our calling. The storm clouds are gathering once again, but like the warriors before us, we will fly through them, we will fight through them, and we will emerge victorious. Because that's what airmen do, that's what warriors do, and that's what Americans do. Thank you, and may God bless the United States Air Force.
Here's some of the news you may have missed from the Wing's social media. You can find additional Wing news on Facebook and Instagram at 102IW and at our website at www.102iw.ang.af.mil. Before that, just a quick announcement from the Eagle's Nest. they will be hosting a bonfire and barbecue on Saturday of the June RSD. I repeat, Saturday of the June RSD, starting at 4 p.m. The event is open to both members and non-members of the Nest, and live music will be supplied by the Jody Moore Band. The bonfire and band are free. The barbecue is $15 payable on the serving line. Please see the flyers that are circulating via email and the Eagle's Nest Facebook page for more details. Major General Gary Keefe, the Adjutant General, Massachusetts National Guard, was awarded the Distinguished Order of Merit, Grau di Bernardino Caballero, in the grade of Grand Cross by President Santiago Peña, the President of the Republic of Paraguay, in the Independence Hall of the Government Palace in Paraguay on April 24, 2025. This is the highest award the commander of the Paraguayan Armed Forces grants to civilians and military personnel for their distinctive, valuable service. It recognizes the strong alliance between Paraguay and the United States and the continued commitment to military cooperation. This engagement further enhanced the long-term, mutually beneficial security relationship between the Massachusetts National Guard and Paraguay, established through the State Partnership Program. Airmen of the 102nd Medical Group, Detachment 1, provided medical and casualty support during the 129th running of the Boston Marathon, April 20, 2025. Initially staged at the early hour of 6 a.m. in the town of Hopkinton, the 35-person team consisting of airmen from the 102nd Intelligence Wing and the 104th Fighter Wing set up and prepared for the start of the marathon. In the event of an emergency, the medical element provides situationally dependent emergency triage, stabilization, treatment, tracking, and regulation for patients, evacuees, and support personnel. The Massachusetts National Guard held its 2025 Best Warrior Competition on Camp Edwards, Mass. On April 10, 2025. Airmen and soldiers were tested on a variety of tactical and technical tasks, including weapons proficiency, land navigation, and combat casualty care. The competition also tested leadership, strength, endurance, and basic military skills. The 102nd Medical Group conducted a Tactical Casualty Combat Care, or TCCC, exercise on Camp Edwards on April 4, 2025. Participants enhanced their medical readiness and developed critical life-saving skills they would need in a potential combat situation. In small teams, airmen completed four trauma lane rotations designed to simulate high-stress combat scenarios. Throughout the four different scenarios, they were required to apply all three phases of TCCC: care under fire, tactical field care, and tactical evacuation. Read these and all of our news on our various social media accounts and website. Details at the end of this podcast. Welcome to Five Questions, where we talk to subject matter experts about topics that are relevant to you, the wing, and the mission. This month, we're happy to have Mr. Scott Etler, Wing Director of Inspections, to address some questions about the upcoming combat readiness assessments that wing airmen will be participating in. Welcome to the show, Mr. Etler. Before we get started, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? What's your military story, and how did you come to be our Director of Inspections here in the wing?
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I've got a long military history. I from Falmouth, originally from Falmouth. I grew up, went to Falmouth High School, graduated in 1991. Joined the military because I didn't think I was ready to go to college. I thought I was going to waste my parents' money partying and having a good time out there. So I joined the military. Originally, I was supposed to go into the Army, but my parents wouldn't sign the enlistment paperwork because they were a little bit nervous about me going to the Army. So I went into the Air Force. So joined the Air Force in 1991, headed out to Bitburg, Germany as an F-15 crew chief. I was there for 2 years, and Bitburg closed, and I moved over to Spangdahlen for another 2 years, and then I hurt my back, and I had to cross train into command and control, which was the career field that I remained in for the next 20 years. So I served active duty for 24 years, retired out of Kadena. Like I said, first two assignments were in Germany. Next assignment was at Nellis Air Force Base in Nevada. where I continued, learned my new career field. I was part of NORAD and ACC, went through a host of inspections out there as part of the EET team out there training. And from there, I went back to Germany to Spangdalm, where I continued my command and control career field, part of the nuclear command and control cadre team. We were there. I was there during 9/11, and that was an interesting time overseas. And then from there, I PCS'd to Guam. So I was at Guam for 2 years, where I was under Air Mobility Command. That was a little bit out of my comfort zone because I was in a black and white career field. It was emergency action procedures. Everything is mandated and directed. It's a go, no-go type of career field. Air mobility was a little bit loose for me. And then from there, but it was a great experience. I got to live on a tropical island for 2 years, which was really nice. Felt like I was on vacation with my family, but it was a lot of work, a lot of new concepts that I had to wrap my hands around.
I know the island well. Three years there myself.
Yeah, it's such a great experience. I was there on a short tour with my family. Very isolating, 15 degrees north of the equator. Weather was 86 degrees, as you remember. Yep. Got my scuba certified out there with my son. It was just an amazing experience. From there, found myself back, headed back to Germany. I went to Ramstein for my next assignment was at Ramstein, where I was at the USAFE Command Center. I was the NCOIC of Consul Operations, more nuclear command and control, conventional command and control, higher level, focus on managing and maintaining the command posts throughout Europe. And I was there for about 2 years. And then I moved over to the 603rd AOC, where I was the superintendent of the Air Mobility Control Team. And then I promoted myself out of that, and then I was selected and hired to be part of the USAFE IG team, where I was a superintendent of operations and command posts all across Europe. So I would go out and inspect with a team of 45 to 50 inspectors across USAFE. So I was able to get experience at all the bases all over Europe, all the NATO bases. There was mobility exercises, there was force generation exercises, nuclear surety exercises and inspections that we participated, compliance inspections. I got to partner with all of our NATO folks out there, which was a great experience, very broadening. I considered my time in the USAFE IG as one of, I would say the pinnacle of my career, but it was a very important part of my career where I actually learned so much more because I had all of these subject matter experts around me. And it was more or less a humbling experience because you think you know something, but then you have everybody around the table and you really learn a lot about how the base works together as a team and how we function to get the job done. So I really has a special place in my heart being on the inspection team. It requires a certain personality to be on there. And right at the end of that, I decided, I didn't want to be on the IG team too long, especially active duty wise. You can become a little bit, jaded in that way because you're constantly looking at things in a different way. I talked my wife into another assignment, and we headed out to Kadena. We was at Kadena for 3 years, and obviously focused on the Indo-PACOM theater out there. And then I retired in 2015 out of Kadena. And then I headed back to Falmouth, which was my hometown, hoping to find a place for me in the population. I spent 19 years, six overseas assignments, 19 years overseas. It felt like I was a foreigner in my own country for a while.
Of course.
I worked for Cape Air for a couple of years as a safety programs manager. I was working with the FAA doing investigations and safety reporting and stuff. And then this job came advertised, and it was right across the street from where I live, and it just seemed like it was a great fit for me. It really got me back to where my roots were, because I joined when I was 18, and here I was serving again in a different capacity, which was really exciting for me. And here we are today, 6.5 years later. Yep. I'm in the IG as a director of inspections, and it's been a very rewarding and very tough and challenging role to be in. And I'm very proud of being part of the wing and helping airmen succeed in their day-to-day lives.
Well, that's great. That's great. And it's good to have you here. And based on the latter half of your career and your experience, sounds like you landed in a great spot. And the opportunity of working in the Inspector General's office here for the wing is seemed like it was made just for you.
It seemed like it. It was very. I don't know. Maybe fate. I don't know. Sure. It just seemed like it was just right across the street. It was right across the street. I live right in Hatchville, which is about 7 minutes away. My commute is about 7 minutes. So it just seemed perfect fit. But what I did learn is going from active duty into the Air National Guard, there was a lot to be learned, a lot to adjust to. I'm very proud to be part of this with this team. So
that's excellent. Yeah. Okay. So, now, with that, are you ready for five questions?
I have to be ready. I'm ready.
All right. So question number one, and we're going to be talking about as I mentioned in the intro, we're going to be talking about combat readiness assessments. So number one, what is the main purpose of a combat readiness assessment, and how does it contribute to the wing's mission effectiveness?
Well, first of all, a combat readiness assessment is... We'll call it a combat readiness exercise. The assessment was just a nomer that we had to apply to this particular event because we wanted to assess some different things that we felt we needed to look at. And one of those things was identifying opportunities and developing capabilities. So we wanted to do it in a way to where we can make some improvements along the way as we get ready to assess our capabilities during this readiness exercise. So this is a very important part of our wing's responsibility. They are crucial. They provide a crucial snapshot of the wing's combat readiness. It enables data-driven decisions that commanders must be able to fall back to in order to improve training, allocation of resources, and ultimately improve the wing's ability to execute the mission effectively in a contested environment. It sounds like the book wrote that statement, but really we're here to, we have a job as military members. We put on the uniform, we have a mission to accomplish, and these exercises get focused on those mission essential tasks that are needed and required in order for us to win against our peer adversaries should we go to combat with our peer adversaries. So each unit, for the most part in this wing, has mission essential tasks that they're required to be able to execute in those times of need, and that's why we do these things. So in a nutshell, they're used to determine the unit's ability to execute their assigned wartime mission, how well we can perform those core tasks and the functions in a simulated combat environment. So we use them to identify strengths and weaknesses and enables commanders to focus on training efforts and resource allocations to improve our readiness levels. So it's a lot of words, and I'm hoping it's understood by everybody, but it is really, really an important aspect of our job. And the main purpose is identifying gaps and risks and things that we need to address to make us more efficient and effective and able to get our job done, no matter what gets thrown at us. So that's pretty much it. So And one of the things that we have to remember is these combat readiness exercises aren't just something that the IG is responsible for running. Units need to be focused on mission essential training during drill weekends. It increases the confidence of every unit member out here. So if we do these more frequently, they become more confident in these roles and responsibilities. And then it just becomes part of our daily ethos, part of our ethos in here in the wing.
Great. Great. All right. Question number two. What is the typical flow of a CRA? What can an airman expect to experience on a day-to-day basis during the assessment period? And how can airmen best contribute to their mission's overall success?
Okay. So, the typical flow of a readiness exercise is we want to gradually increase from peacetime in a permissive environment to a more contested and degraded environment. We ramp up events. Yep. So what we can expect in almost every single readiness evaluation that's run by this wing is increasing our force protection conditions, putting us at a higher state of readiness to mitigate the effects of any nefarious activities that come within our installation, whether it's through our comm channels, cyber effects from our peer adversaries, or from just outside threats beyond the installation fence. So, those are the kinds of things that they should be expecting. Expect to be challenged. These are not day-to-day things. We don't exercise the status quo. We implement and exercise response capability of security forces. Can they defend the base? Can we get our airmen to and from their workstations to contribute to the big mission out there beyond our fence lines? Can our mission support and sustainment capabilities keep the lights on here? So we're really trying to make sure that we have the resources and the training available to keep these things going. So it's important that we take these events seriously, because this is what the commanders will use to ensure that your unit has the resources available to them, the training, the focus needed to win against our adversaries. So one of the things I'd like to add to this is the scenario is a scenario that's realistic to what we can or could expect in a situation. So we ask everybody to just take it seriously. Don't fight the scenario. It'll come at some, in some cases it might come in quick, it might come be more deliberate, there might be some dead time in between. We just want everybody to understand that there's a method to this, and we'll have WIT members out there inspecting along the way. I'll leave this one. We don't pull any tricks during these inspections or these exercises. In the past, we've run exercises where we're evaluating and someone might not trust, hey, we're done with this inject, and they want to keep it going, but it could derail a scenario. So when a WIT member's out there, it's important that we follow the instructions of our WIT members, the inspectors out there, and if they say to knock it off and move on to the next task, it's time to move on to the next task, because there's a host of other tasks and injects that are coming, and we don't want it to derail or take us down the wrong path, because each scenario that's put in here has objectives, has inspection and evaluation requirements, and we need to make sure that we fulfill that objective in order to meet the commander's intent. These exercises are built off of the commander's intent. The wing Colonel Armijo outlined what she would like to have us exercise, and we put that into an outline, and then we build the plan to make sure this happens.
Excellent. Yep. Question number 3, how does a CRA differ from other inspections, such as a unit effectiveness inspection, UEI, and how can airmen effectively utilize their UEI inspection results to prepare for a CRA?
I'm going to first bring up, there's way too many acronyms in our current inspection process to stay on track of these things. UEI is the old nomer for the higher level ACC inspections that would come here and look at our effectiveness, like unit effectiveness inspections. Those are now called foundational readiness inspections. Those are the compliance type pieces where they'll come in and look at programs and processes and give us feedback on risks that we might not have identified through a unit self-assessment program. The combat readiness exercises change from a readiness exercise to a combat readiness exercise. It adds the combat aspect to it to make sure we're focused on what we should be expecting in the future, or we can expect from the future. These readiness exercises are not training events, and I just want to make sure that everybody understands it. We have opportunities to train out of the cycle of an evaluation year. So these are summarizing, or actually we're looking at the effects, or how our training is it effective? Are we giving enough training more frequently, less frequently? Are our resources there? And that's pretty much what the difference is. Mm-hmm. There's also something called the continuation evaluation process, and that's a virtual look that ACC does in the background to identify what areas they think they need to focus when they come here and put boots on the ground when they do their foundational readiness inspection. So with that being said, it's important for us to remember that they're always looking at us. They're always looking in the system. It's important that we keep our unit self-assessment programs, our commander's inspection programs, and our exercise evaluations continuous throughout the year, and making sure everything's documented so they can see that we're actually doing what we do here at the wing. So as part of a combat readiness exercise, there's mission essential tasks that we are really focused on. And if that makes any sense to the airmen, it might not, but it is something that we have to focus on during these readiness exercises.
Right. Question number four. Beyond the checklists and technical evaluations, what are some of the intangible qualities or characteristics that inspectors look for during a CRA? Things like teamwork, communication, and problem-solving abilities.
Well, those are three really big parts that we do look at. You know, we can, when we evaluate a mission essential task, those are based off of standards within those processes that we have to meet. So that gives us the quantifiable, qualifiable standards written in an AFI or written in a regulation or DOTI or Air National Guard policy or USIDS or wherever that standard lives, we evaluate based off of those standards. But while we're out there evaluating, we're looking at our ability to communicate effectively. How effective is our leadership? Are they making good, informed decisions? Is there a sense of urgency? In the past, we've run exercises where people might be just taking a little bit too long to evacuate the building, and we provide that feedback. Take it seriously, move with a sense of urgency, so we can evaluate whether or not you have a plan and people are adhering to those plans to get out quickly. It's about saving lives in those cases. So Sure. We don't want people to not take these things seriously. It shows we also look at resilience, how airmen are performing out there under stressful environments. Can we adapt to things? You know, I talked a little bit earlier about developing opportunities or looking for opportunities, developing capabilities. You know, we are adapting to how the battlefield will look tomorrow. Should it change here at the wing? Are we taking initiative? Are we stepping out in front rather than waiting for somebody to tell us what to do? Do we have situational awareness? Are we disciplined? And do we have integrity? So these are all intangible qualities, and combined with those technical proficiencies and training, it contributes significantly to the airman's overall readiness and the unit's ability to execute its mission effectively.
Great.
So we observe them, we assess them, and we report them in our readiness exercise reports.
Excellent. Yep. Okay. Last question. Question number five. What advice would you give to an airman who is about to participate in their first CRA? What are the key things to remember to ensure a smooth and successful experience?
I would say, bit of advice would be to just do your best. Do your best and be okay with making mistakes. Your chain of command will help write you, send you in the right direction. But that's what these exercises are for, is we don't want to make a tremendous amount of mistakes, because that would be an indicator that we're not disciplined or trained. Right. But it's okay to go down the wrong path, and because that might identify a process issue that we might need to adjust. So when those things happen, you know, we should be thinking, was the training effective? Are the processes there, or is this an individual issue where they don't have the discipline to stay on task? So It helps us understand that. Just ask every airman to just do their best. Ask lots of questions as we go, and you don't understand, you have a supervisor, chain of command, just ask questions. Communicate throughout the exercise. Don't fight the scenario. The scenario might take you down a path where you feel uncomfortable going down, or might not make sense. Just do what you've been trained to do and respond accordingly, and we'll get through it. That's pretty much it. It's actually not such a... I think it's just a matter of taking it seriously. You know, we haven't really exercised as a wing, in this capacity, in this size, you know, for about 15 years. I mean, our first readiness exercise was in 2023, and we did really well. ACC was observing us, and they thought we had a really great exercise plan, and they actually said, hey, for an employee-in-place wing, this is the benchmark that other employee-in-place wings need to follow, and we want to continue growing off of that. It's a really great feedback from ACC, and we have the opportunity to really benchmark our processes across the Guard and maybe even to other employee-in-place missions. So it's really important that every member of this wing understands their role, understands how it contributes to a much greater picture that we need to provide to ACC, our combatant commanders, so they can make those data-driven decisions at their level in order to task us to take on some very large responsibilities. So that's pretty much the advice I'd like to give to airmen. If any airman out there still doesn't understand what this is about, please come by our room down in our building, and I'll be glad to sit down with anybody and kind of continue this this education on this topic.
Sure. Yeah, that's great.
I have some parting words, if I could.
Oh, no.
Any
no,
parting
no,
words?
No,
Am I allowed
no,
to give parting
no,
words?
Of course, go for it.
I kind of whip this message together as a reminder, and I think it doesn't, maybe most people don't need this reminder, but I felt it was necessary at this time as we enter this new chapter in our lives, and we're seeing what's happening in the world these days. There's a lot of unrest and uncertainties and probably some angst out there in the population. We all have wingmen. We have people that we lean on. Just be there for your airmen. You know, in stressful times, we need to be there for each other as we go through these exercises. It's going to be stressful. It's going to be challenging. But I just want to remind everybody that anybody who's wearing a uniform, that we raised our right hand at one point in our lives. Most everybody in this wing has done that. To solemnly swear to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And when we did that, we entered a very specialized and purpose-driven profession. That's the profession of arms. Less than 1% of our population serves in the military. And that small percentage bears a responsibility to defend the entire nation. That's a huge responsibility of just a small fraction of our profession or of our population. So remember that when you put that uniform on, that we come here with a much bigger purpose. It's much bigger than any of us can even imagine. And being part of that profession of arm requires commitment to those principles and the dedication of upholding the values and tradition of the military that we serve in. So it's a demanding profession that requires both physical and mental readiness, spiritual readiness, physical readiness, mission readiness, and it offers us a special purpose and opportunity to serve in our country. So I feel like these things tie into readiness too. Those are those nebulous things that we might just put in the background and not think of, but this is important, and we all play an important role in making sure that we're ready to take on the biggest challenges that we can expect.
That's great. Great advice, great words of wisdom.
Thanks,
and
Tim.
Appreciate you taking the time to sit with me today, and thanks for being on, and good luck.
Thanks, Tim. I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you.
In the Gulls Gone By segment, A Peck at the Past, we look at a little bit of military history. 160 years ago, on May 5th, 1865, Decoration Day was first observed in the United States with the tradition of decorating soldiers' graves from the Civil War with flowers. The observance date was later moved to May 30th and included American graves from World War I and World War II and became better known as Memorial Day. In 1971, Congress moved Memorial Day to the last Monday in May, thus creating a three-day holiday weekend. 83 years ago, on May 8, 1942, during World War II in the Pacific, the Battle of the Coral Sea began, in which Japan would suffer its first defeat of the war. The battle, fought off New Guinea, marked the first time in history that two opposing naval forces fought by only using aircraft without the opposing ships ever sighting each other. 418 years ago, on May 14, 1607, The first permanent English settlement in America was established at Jamestown, Virginia, by a group of royally chartered Virginia Company settlers from Plymouth, England. 82 years ago, on May 17, 1943, the crew of the B-17F Flying Fortress Memphis Belle completed 25 combat missions in the European theater. Led by Captain Robert Morgan, the crew and aircraft were assigned to the 324th Bombardment Squadron, 91st Bombardment Group, 8 Bomber Command. And 45 years ago, on May 18, 1980, Mount St. Helens volcano erupted in southwestern Washington state, spewing steam and ash over 11 miles into the sky. This was the first major eruption since 1857. Thanks for listening to The Seagull. For more news from the 102nd Intelligence Wing, visit our website at www.102iw.ang.af.mil or search for 102iw on any major social media platform.